Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, holiday hangover edition. Talking all things NFL Week 12. Hopefully your Thanksgivings went extremely well, and more importantly, they should have been rather profitable around these Bet the Board parts. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, Payne Insider. And Payne, we don't gloat about winners over here because we expect to win a lot of our games, but there was a result on Sunday that I'm going to give you the floor to try and gloat over, and that was Kansas City losing outright as a 9.5-point favorite because we now have life on our Chiefs win total.
Oh, that's where you're going. I thought you were going somewhere else. No, you're actually pretty lively for a Monday.
I mean, I'm trying to bring the pep in the step. I mean, to put in perspective, I don't think people realize that we chat for a few minutes before I make heads or tails of exactly where we want to go. And sometimes I can gauge your energy levels, so I have to try and compensate if I don't feel you're at like 95% or better.
Yeah, tryptophan is still in the system, apparently.
As long as it's not too much
Cheetos. A little rough going. I didn't drink. Did not have a single drink.
Yeah, you have grown soft. You have grown soft over these years.
I was told this weekend I was soft as a ball sack.
Well, as long as it's the underside of a ball sack, you're in good shape, right?
Someone on Twitter said, I am soft as a ball sack, I guess. I don't know what that
means. Shout out to that guy who's hopefully still listening to the podcast.
Of course he is. He said he was unsubscribing because we didn't give other easy winners in college football this week, apparently. And I took that as a compliment. I do. Not a lot of manual labor going into these hands. Everyone comments on my hands. When I shake hands, they say, man, you have really soft hands. And I said, yeah, picking winners and sitting on a computer chair and typing away at a keyboard. No manual labor this way.
That's a good thing, then, because I'm not sure you or I is built for manual labor and long-term life of moving lumber or furniture or whatever else it may be.
Knock on wood, hopefully.
I see what you still did. Young. I see what you did there.
We're still young.
Well, let's hope we can keep picking winners. So do you want to gloat about the Chiefs or do you want to not take the opportunity when I lobbed a softball for you at the rim?
Yeah, I don't really do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
We still need them to lose a game or two there. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little different when Alex Smith isn't doing things that he hasn't traditionally done in the first 33 years of his life. And Kareem Hunt. Everyone wanted to anoint him Emmitt Smith after 3 weeks.
Yeah,
tough game there, right?
Yeah, little bit difference between what we've seen from Kareem Hunt during his rookie season and what Ezekiel Elliott was able to do. But Kansas City still some work to do to get that win total the window. Thankfully, Phil Dawson had a little bit of extra oomph after the Thanksgiving holiday because I'm not sure, Payne, we wanted that Cardinals-Jags game to go to overtime, knowing how that game may or may not have ended.
Is that the ultimate? If you're like a degenerate, I think at this point forward, you're just betting Cardinals games because every time Blaine Gabbert goes to throw, it's a sweat.
Oh, trust me. When he throws a touchdown pass late in the game to get the Cardinals, what was it, a 24-17 lead? I'm not sure if his arm was hit, if that was a duck. And then to see a Cardinals receiver streaking wide open behind that talented Jaguar secondary, I was just shocked as anybody had found a player wearing the same color jersey.
The reason why Arians garners so much respect from professional bettors is he's super aggressive. And that's one thing you look. It doesn't matter if it's Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert. We're throwing the ball. It just doesn't matter who his quarterback is. He's sticking to his game plan, and you have to love that about him, I guess. And Blaine Gabbert, you know, he was successful in some throws. Still doesn't have a ton of touch. Loves to throw those line drives into defensive linemen's hands and helmets. But he was good enough.
Got the cover there. I know there were a number of listeners who were a bit miffed that the number moved against us, but more importantly, able to cash that ticket. As always, for those folks new to the Bet the Board podcast, Monday show, we'll chat about some of the things that we saw yesterday. And of course, on Thanksgiving Day, some look-ahead lines with four games that have seen some market movement after 1 week's worth of results, a movie review about Murder on the Orient Express, and of course, your big game breakdown for Monday Night Football brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition and the American Gaming Association. So, Payne, we may as well start with the surprises from Week 12. And for me, we can take what we want from Sunday Night Football, but I think Brett Hundley actually showed some progress as an NFL-caliber quarterback, getting Green Bay to the window as a 14-point underdog, despite being grossly outgained, and the Packers the beneficiaries of a +3 turnover margin against the Steelers, who still look like they were suffering from a holiday hangover themselves.
Let's hope Brent Hundley has enough in the tank to get wins the next two weeks, so then it encourages Aaron Rodgers to come back for that late-season game against Detroit that could decide our win total there. Now, one thing that we have seen when it comes to the Pittsburgh Steelers, they play to the level of their competition. This probably wasn't a game. I know it was on Sunday Night TV. It's not a conference opponent. You can go through the motions and get a win here. Brett Hundley, when you looked at him, he did have some nice explosive passes. 75% of his passing yards came after the catch. He wasn't that brilliant. I don't think he did enough. There was a lot of three and outs. He was either hitting the home run or they were punting after three plays.
I mean, he had receivers that were wide open downfield. He had about a 15-yard radius to drop those balls open in the buckets.
They were wide open. And a lot of blown coverages there. But yes, 75% of Hundley's passing yards came after the catch. And, you know, that's somewhat the Green Bay system. When you have guys like Cobb, a lot of that stuff is coming after the catch. It's short passing. He did enough for them to win. So you got to give him credit for that. Hopefully the next 2 weeks, he can win games that are certainly manageable with the Bucs at home and on the road at Cleveland.
Definitely change the dynamics of the NFC and what we're looking at. Thursday, anything really jump off the page for you from a surprise standpoint, whether it's Phillip Rivers throwing for 400-plus yards against the Cowboys, Case Keenum continuing to keep this Vikings gravy train on the tracks, or that the Giants continue to look more and more inept every time they drop back to attempt to gain positive yards from scrimmage in the second half?
Surprising, no. I mean, I think the Vikings got there. We talked about the sharp money and that being extremely real. Did envision some buyback on the Lions, which we did see in the market, but that got down to as low game day. Vikings minus 117 on the money line, that snapped back. So we alluded to the professional side was the Vikings there. Chargers got their business handled. That game was a blowout. The final score isn't indicative of what really happened there. Whatever was going on with the kicker situation was forcing San Diego into some situations where they're going for it on like 4th and 13 inside the Cowboys 20. So you looked at halftime and I was watching the market, like the back end access was like more pummeling of the San Diego Chargers just because they were dominating that game. It would have been a little closer. There was a phantom hold there on Dak's run outside, which would have made the game, I believe, 9-7 at that point, which would have made it somewhat competitive. But you look at the metrics, you look at the box score, that thing was a box-to-wire blowout for the San Diego Chargers. And don't look now. Making a little run. They got a potential to win the division.
Los Angeles, the football capital of the National Football League, given the Rams' big win over the Saints, the Chargers very much back in the AFC West race. And one last thing on a surprise standpoint, I'm not really sure it's the right classification or categorization for it. Dave Tooley tweeted out this stat, Payne. Favorite since week 7, 54-23-7. We talked early in the season about how dogs were having their day. And I know a lot of people, underdogs lose. It's okay if I lose when the books lose. I feel like we've done a pretty good job to avoid a lot of the landmines that have been out there for some of the dogs with fleas that we normally would be on week in, week out.
I've talked to all my guys, and it's like, listen, every now and then there's a season like this. And it happened last year late from like week 10 on. It was a similar thing where the public was just absolutely killing it. But these are the seasons where if you can just break even in the NFL or you can muster up getting into the black somewhat, it's positive.
Well, I mean, we talked about earlier in the year. I mean, when things were going so well for underdogs, we had weeks where, the inverse was true. And you're talking about dogs going 12-2 against the number. I mean, you and I off air saying, you know what? this regression is going to come, and I don't think we've capitalized nearly enough weeks 1 through 4 that it's going to be a good situation as we get deeper into the season. Fortunately, I think both you and I have taken a little bit more disciplined approach. I know you typically play a few more NFL sides and totals each week than I do, and have to think that the sniper mentality more so than the shotgun has worked out in our favor.
I had 2 plays this week in the NFL. That was it.
It's all it takes sometimes. If you go 2-0 with those 2 plays, you're in good shape.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Went 1-1.
Smaller position on the
Adam Gase and Matt Moore got me.
The gunslinger Matt Moore getting the best of you. Oh,
I knew right before half when we didn't kick a field goal and he just chucked a 50-50 ball that got picked off. We didn't get those 3 points before half to cut it to 1 score when you were getting the ball out of the half. That was going to come back to haunt us. And then, as much as I love Gase, he had a situation to start the second half where it was literally 4th and an inch, and he chose to punt, which then forced him later on in the game to go for it on 4th and 11 from his own 30. Looked like Jarvis Landry hauled it in, but they ruled it no catch, and there's no way that was going to get overturned. And then, the short field did us in there. But, yeah, Dolphins plus 17 spurned me a little bit, so lost some juice yesterday.
I was disappointed I couldn't get you on that Chargers bandwagon on Thanksgiving. Tried.
Yeah.
Tried to get you to the window there, but – either way, for
the problem was at that point, I could have gotten to the window, but then after the 1 o'clock game, I said, you know what, I'm off for the day. I did see eventually it went down to pick.
Yeah, you were able to get pick right before kickoff.
Probably would have gotten me to the party, but things happen.
It happens. It happens to the best of us. As far as disappointments were concerned, I think a holiday gift is in store. Maybe a nice bottle of red, a wine and a cheese plate for Doug Marrone and his late game clock management that allowed Arizona to even attempt a field goal of 57 yards with Phil Dawson.
I'm going to let you finish that.
Here's my take on this.
You give me your take, and then I'm going to give you mine, probably the correct take, by the way.
Here we go. So if you know going into this situation, your quarterback and the way your defense has kind of been your bread and butter, and I like what I saw out of Blake Bortles in the second half. I mean, showed some tenacity, made some good decisions, albeit the throw to Tyrann Mathieu is terrible when you can just kind of tuck that ball in, maybe attempt a long field goal. Worst case, you pin Arizona back. But if you're not going to be aggressive coming right out, knowing exactly what the clock looks like, how do you not run the ball and force Arizona to take its final timeout and put them behind the eight ball? And it was something else, not to go on a tangent, but it was a similar situation to what I saw unfold in the Saints-Rams game at the end of the half. With 17 seconds to go, the Saints have a chance to call a timeout and force McVay's hands, or McDermott, I get the two of them confused, McVay's hands for the Rams, and go, all right, if you want to attempt a 57-yard field goal, you're going to do it with consequence, with 17 seconds, knowing that if he misses, the Saints could have had the ball at midfield and maybe gotten a field goal range themselves. Instead, they let that clock run all the way down, and in my opinion, it becomes a no-risk proposition for the Rams. I feel like with the Jags, either take it into overtime, or you play this game out with a little bit more aggressive play calling. Maybe I'm completely off base, maybe I'm wrong. I just didn't feel that was the best execution in the late-game situation for Jacksonville to maximize their chances to get out of the desert with a win.
Saints situation, you're 100% correct, and I haven't figured out why we're not just hiring these organizations worth billions. Like, you got to hire somebody, 6 figures salary, who just tells you when to punt, when to go for it, things you should be doing with your clock management. But that's an easy one. Call a timeout, force in. We saw that earlier in the year with Ben McAdoo and the Detroit Lions in our first half under in that game.
I erased that from my memory.
Where you simply call a timeout, force the opponent into a decision rather than making it an easy one. That's quite easy. Back to Doug Marrone. We're in a spot now where we like castrate coaches when they're not aggressive, and now we're going to hammer them when they're not conservative enough. Like, it's tough for me to do that. I think when you allow Bortles to throw on second down, what does that show? It kind of shows the rest of your team that you have confidence in them. And listen, it's an NFL team that's 7-4 with Blake Bortles playing quarterback. I don't think I'm going to launch shots at the coach responsible for 7-4 with Blake Bortles. And the other thing here is when we talk about these disappointments and things that surprised us, we were on Arizona. We expected the Cardinals to win here. We expected them to have a game effort. Let's look at Jacksonville's defense, right? They let up 27 to Gabbert. That's the biggest thing here, right? The defense had an opportunity to win that game or send it into overtime. They let Bortles complete two passes that at least gets them in range for the Dawson field goal. You look at overall, the Cardinals, 43% of their plays were successful. That's league average, but if you have this defense that everyone's clamoring for that says, hey, this is like the Baltimore Ravens defense with Ray Lewis, you can't even allow an average effort with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. So I think there's a lot of blame to go around for that one.
All right, well, that's fair. And, of course, Jacksonville now in a flat-footed tie, I guess, behind by virtue of their head-to-head loss against the Titans, a half game out of first. Of course, those two teams will meet in Week 17. You may even want to go as far as penciling that in for Sunday Night Football because it could potentially decide the AFC South. Takeaways from the weekend, and I guess, Payne, I said half-jokingly when we chatted earlier, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo now poised to be the heir apparent to Joe Montana and Steve Young with his two-for-two performance and his first career touchdown pass under center.
Comes in cold off the bench, dances around a few times, zip, zip, touchdown. You know, he's an NFL quarterback. C.J. Beathard is not. This is going to be an interesting tandem to watch with Shanahan, who's a play-designing wizard, and you have a competent quarterback in Jimmy G. Bright things ahead for San Francisco.
I can tell you the market agrees that Jimmy G is going to be the starting quarterback this weekend.
I didn't want to go there, but it looks like it's moving a little bit this morning.
Yeah, from 5 down to 3.5 right now. We'll see how far that number goes. And the last thing I want to ask you is kind of about the NFC playoff pictures. We've seen this take a little bit more shape over the last couple of weeks. Teams regressing, the Eagles maybe distancing themselves. How do we see the top four in the NFC between the Rams, Saints, Vikings, and Eagles kind of playing out? Do we think there's a clear pecking order between those two teams? Are the Eagles definitely the best team that you've seen in that conference?
Well, they're all good teams, and we have them, I think, all power rated off the top of my head in the top seven or so. The one team you excluded from there is the Falcons. I would take the Falcons on a neutral field over a team like the Rams. I would, this scares me to say it, but man, I don't know. I think we're going to see this Atlanta team start to trend. I mean, they're already starting to do it. I think they're going to be trending forward. I think they're going to make a little Super Bowl run here. But yeah, all those teams in the NFC that you mentioned, they're all elite teams. Really, I think off the top of my head, when we look at this, you obviously have New England and Pittsburgh in the AFC power rated in the top five. And then you have this mixture of the Saints, Vikings, Eagles, Falcons, and even, I guess, the Rams to a touch lesser extent right behind those teams. So the NFC is an interesting race. I'm looking at this playoff picture. There's actually a lot of good teams here. There's going to be teams that are spurned and left out in the cold that are going to have a winning record, and you're looking at teams in the AFC that may sneak in with a 500 record.
It should be an interesting last couple of weeks of the season. I mean, we talk about veteran quarterback play. We know we're going to get in the AFC with the front runners there. But the NFC, it almost appears to be new kids on the block, aside from maybe the Saints and the aforementioned Falcons. Don't want to write the Seahawks or Panthers off yet, those guys with veteran leadership. I'm just glad you're not coming on the podcast to try and make a case for the Lions offering value in the futures market.
What?
I said, I'm just glad you're not coming on the podcast to try and convince people that the Lions make sense as a viable futures bet, like some people in our industry.
Oh, I don't know. They stink.
Yeah, they're not a good football team. Not a good football team, but I digress completely. May as well
The schedule's a little soft, I guess, and if you win the division, you're effectively hosting a playoff game. I guess I would get the thought process behind there.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure. I don't think. I mean, when you look at that division, like the Vikings are really going to have to crater now after getting the win. If they'd have lost on Thanksgiving, it'd be a much different dynamic.
So the division's done at this point.
Yeah, it'd be a much different situation unfolding there. But all right, enough about futures and some of the stuff we saw. Let's kind of take a quick once over of some of the games for NFL Week 13. And obviously no greater place to start than paying them with a Thursday night game, where I've seen a look-ahead line from the Westgate Superbook peg the Cowboys as 3-point home favorites against the Washington Redskins. Obviously, the Cowboys taking on water faster than the Titanic. Dallas now a 1.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. I mean, if there's not a time to buy low on the Cowboys, when will there be a time to try and back this football team going forward?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't done enough work on this game, but pure power number, the market is pretty in line with what we have. It was pretty in line with the pick'em that I made the San Diego game. You know, the coaching staff is going to have to do their job and figure out how to make things easier for Dak, for the rest of the players. I've been talking about how basic the Cowboys concepts are for years. Stress them the last 2 weeks. Dallas does nothing overly creative. I know that's now the mainstream viewpoint after their Thanksgiving Day game, which everyone saw, but we've been talking about this for a while. We've pinpointed all these issues and how Zeke masks them. It's why I've been saying this running back is worth more than anyone in the league. It was at least worth 2 points, and everyone told me I was an idiot. Without Zeke, the offensive line isn't as good in protection. The opposing defenses can focus more on a passing game of Dallas that features, what, you know, a quarterback that's meh, receivers and tight ends that aren't elite or past their prime. And he masks a lot of the defensive issues. You know, Sean Lee is a huge loss in that regard as well. He's iffy to go this week. Maybe I uncover something by the time we reconvene Thursday, but right now, this line one is exactly what our pure power number makes it.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch Dallas try and sort out an identity that clearly they haven't found. Jason Garrett not putting this team in a position to cater to their strengths, however limited they may be, without the services of Ezekiel Elliott and some of the defensive injuries that you mentioned there. Patriots, Bills, look ahead number for this game. Payne, New England was a double-digit favorite for a trip to Orchard Park, New York. Now we're looking at New England, a modest 7.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. I'm not willing to say the Bills figure out all that ails them with a win against Kansas City, a much different animal from an offensive standpoint in terms of some of the pressure that New England can put on them than what Kansas City was able to do this weekend at Arrowhead.
I agree. 10 was probably a lot in this spot. You do get the outright win. The Patriots, man, they battled through one of the toughest spots of the entire week to cover that number. That was wild. Patriots have had a lot of success against the Bills over the years. I do think, though, you're looking at this Bills team, and it's crazy. If the playoffs were to start,
they're
like
in
right this second, Buffalo's in. So it's a tough matchup against the Patriots. Even with a loss here, you start to look at the schedule. Even with a loss here against the Patriots, after that, you get a Colts team who's a dome team traveling to Buffalo in December. You get the Dolphins traveling to Buffalo in December. I would think in the AFC, 9 wins gets you in the playoffs, and Buffalo has a real possibility at that. And the biggest thing here, and it's a note that I got, and why I'm kicking myself in the ass I didn't play Buffalo this week, the biggest thing here is the locker room. They love Tyrod Taylor. He is their guy. And McDermott did not come out and endorse Tyrod as the starter for the rest of the season after the abysmal Peterman performance. It appears, after what I was told and what I saw against Kansas City, the guys in that Buffalo locker room are playing for a guy they love in Tyrod Taylor. So it should be max effort the rest of the way. They're in the playoff hunt. There could be some value.
Interesting game there, as we know that Buffalo has tended to play New England relatively close. Curious to see that number and how far it'll go. Kansas City, I mean, we've talked about the Chiefs' struggles, the market clearly reflecting it. Look ahead number at Kansas City is a 6-point road favorite at the Jets. Now at betonline.ag, you're looking at Kansas City, a 3.5-point chalk in this particular spot. Eventually, Payne, there's got to be opportunity to buy at the bottom of the market for Kansas City. I'm just personally not sure that I can lay points with a team on the road, especially over a field goal that has mustered a grand total of 1 touchdown the last 9 quarters, and yesterday in the loss to Buffalo had 1 first down and 57 yards in an entire half of football.
Playing in the same stadium 2 times in 3 weeks, obviously, you know, must win for KC at this point. Possibly Darrell Revis making his first start back in New York. That should be interesting. I didn't get a chance to watch the Jets game Sunday. I have to go back and do that. But just looking at a lot of these metrics, you have to scratch your head and say, like, how did the Jets not cover, right? New York outgained Carolina by 1.2 yards per play. Panthers were successful in 34% of their offensive snaps. Cam was 11 for 28. So I guess my point here is the scoreboard said the Jets lost. The metrics say they won the game. And so there's going to be some value here, I think, from that perspective on the Jets. Internally, there's some clamoring going on for Mahomes. They're not going to make that move. I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can make that same mistake. McDermott made. Learn from that mistake, because you are still, if you're Kansas City, in the playoff hunt. But at some point here, they're really the team we thought they were. It's tough for me to talk about KC because I don't want to come off sounding too biased. Like, this is the team I thought they were.
I mean, they're an average football
team. This isn't shocking to me. They're an average football team with a good head coach that game plans really well. The defense is an abortion. It's abysmal. They can't stop anybody on the ground. The Jets are going to have success moving the ball, I would think. It just comes down to the Chiefs if they can move the ball as well here. At 44, 43 and a half, I would envision, and again, professionals have been gravitating towards these KC overs for the last few weeks. I'm gravitating towards Jets overs a lot this season. Now, it's a tough place with swirling winds, so you're going to want to monitor that. Let's see what the weather looks like, but if there's no weather there, 43 and a half is really short.
Be interesting to see. Kansas City, you feel like, is going to have a breakout game at some point. It's just a question of when and how many losing over tickets there'll be on them before we start to see them look like the offensive juggernaut they were amid that torrid 5-0 start. Into the Sunday night football game, Payne, and one of the marquee games of the day, where your look-ahead number had Philadelphia, a 6-point road favorite up in the Pacific Northwest to take on the Seahawks. Right now, betonline.ag, you're looking at Philadelphia, a modest 4-point favorite. And of course, Philadelphia can do no wrong in the eyes of sports bettors as they blindly bet the Eagles, cashing, I believe, 6 out of the last 7 or something close to it. I mean, this team just continues to bury numbers, and you're not even talking about lucky covers. I mean, these are comfortable wins for Philadelphia amid this hot streak.
How did we get here? How did we arrive at this number? So the look ahead was 6.
Yep.
And they win in blowout fashion.
Correct.
And the Seahawks, okay, they beat the 49ers. How did we get down to 3?
I'm trying to figure that out myself. That's why I'm coming to you, the line guru that you are, to try and shed a little light on this particular topic, because for me, I think you open it at 6, and books basically give a giant FU to people going, all right, if you want to bet the Eagles against us, you're going to have to start laying a premium, because as we talk about at great lengths, both here and on the college edition of the Bet the Board podcast, markets are supposed to be efficient. They're not supposed to be free money giveaways where 90% of the tickets come in on one side, especially in prime time.
So I get the angle here, right? This is the Seahawks' last stand. This is must win. The Eagles are comfortable in controlling their own destiny, yada, yada, yada. I get all that. So the spot, the situation is certainly Seahawks. The matchup, probably a little tough when you look at that Seahawks offensive line against the Eagles defensive line. This is probably a last stand here for the Seahawks. I get all that, so you open it a little short. But at 3, there's only one way you're going to take money in this game. And right now, I know it's early in the week, but what is that going to look like? Is that going to be?
I mean, I'm figuring this game, honestly, when it breaks, when we talk about bet splits as we get closer. And let's say this game closes at 4, where it sits right now, or at least holds 4 for a portion of the week. I mean, you're talking about 85% of the tickets, in my opinion, coming in on the road favorite Eagles in this spot.
Let's see what we made this thing here really quick. You can continue on if you would like, and I'll just poke at this sheet here.
Well, I want to ask you along the same lines. You talk about the X's and O's, and we talk about pure power numbers all the time. Matchup-wise, I don't know if there's a worse setup for Seattle, knowing that what ails this football team is their offensive line. Philadelphia, we've droned on and on that the strength of this team is their defensive line, their ability to rotate in fresh bodies, which I think will put a lot of pressure on Seattle, especially knowing that the Seahawks are one-dimensional. I mean, they gave a stat yesterday, and I'm not sure if it still holds true through week 12, that the leading rusher, as far as running backs were concerned for the Seahawks, was Chris Carson with a little over 200 yards. That's well and good. Chris Carson hasn't played since week 4, Payne.
Maybe I was a little wrong on this. We made the game 3 also.
I mean, matchup-wise, I understand pure power. Matchup-wise, do you give Seattle an edge anywhere on the football field right now?
It's tough to say. I mean, I'm still not in love with the Eagles secondary, although improving. The defense is really good. I mean, this when you bet this game and you're on Seattle here, it's on Russell Wilson's shoulders. You're not expecting a ground game here against that Eagles defensive line. That's number one in adjusted line yards. Russell Wilson's going to be running for his life, trying to make plays. We know what that secondary looks like for the Seahawks with a lot of those guys injured. Griffin will be a question mark for this one, I would think. So the Eagles should have success there in their short passing attack. The hope here is the Seahawks are going to have to generate a pass rush to get to Wentz. And again, as great as Wentz is playing, he is a little bit different on the road. And this is going to be a hostile environment. And all the chips are on the table for Seattle. So I get it. Let's see how high this gets.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this number goes. I just wonder, I mean, when we talk about the Seahawks under their current construct, if we really believe this team is a contender or a pretender at this juncture of the season.
Well, I mean, a team like Seattle, with their pedigree, you can't ever call them a pretender. You know, if they manage to sneak into the playoffs, like what three seed is looking forward to hosting Seattle?
I mean, I don't think any of them.
None.
If we break it down that way. Although I'd say that, you know, it'd be awfully interesting if we're talking about Seattle going on the road to New Orleans to take on the Saints. I think that'd make for a fascinating wild card weekend type game.
That would be interesting, certainly. I think right now their probability of the playoffs is like 35% chance. But again, you see a team like Atlanta that's playing confidently. They're back to their Super Bowl run ways. They also hold the head-to-head tiebreaker after last Monday night. It's an uphill battle for Seattle.
We'll get a better indication of exactly where this team's at. But either way, a game on paper that should be extremely compelling for Sunday Night Football. So from something that was, or at least appears to be compelling, to something that, in my opinion, and I think your opinion, wasn't all that compelling for our movie review Monday. We saw Murder on the Orient Express. A little to say, Payne, I was rather disappointed in this film unable to deliver despite having a very high-profile cast.
I love the cast, and I'm a big murder mystery guy, a little old school in my ways. I thought this would be for me.
But?
It was a little boring. It failed to keep me entertained. Now, I didn't see the original, and people claim that this one was an awesome adaptation. Is that the word?
Yeah, that's a good word. Good word choice out of you, correctly used.
Okay. You know, if that's the case, I may view this movie a little differently. And it had that old school corny feeling to it, right? Of those like murder mysteries. Like, it's not like Matlock or like Murder, She Wrote, you know, but it has that corny, fun to watch feeling. I would wait until this
Straight
comes out
to DVD
on like Apple.
On this one for me, that's for sure.
I would wait till this comes out on Apple TV or HBO later on down the road. I wouldn't waste 2-3 hours of my time during football season on this movie, although I already did.
Those are 2 to 3 hours of your life you're not getting back, last I checked.
No. You know, awesome cast. And it does. It has that old school vibe. Can't believe I'm a big Murder, She Wrote fan, by the way. Late at night, if I'm a little bored and I'm looking for a little TV before I pass out to put me to sleep.
Well, I mean, that's a little more family.
Jessica Fletcher. She's my gal.
Well, at least that's a little more family friendly than like Red Shoe Diary. So we're proud of you in that regard.
Okay. You know, Night Nurse is 17. It shit gets expensive.
Great movie reference, by the way.
So, yeah, you wait for this one.
Yeah, I don't think this is one you're going to run to see. I'm not going to quite put it on the same level as Blade Runner, but if we're looking at the total, if we're looking at the total body of work for football season 2017, this one's fighting for seller bragging rights, or at least second to last, maybe drafting number two. What? I don't even know what's out. Do we have any good options this week?
Man, I didn't even look. Let's see what we got here.
I mean, I almost feel like you got to go family friendly. I mean, the movie getting all the acclaim is Coco, about the Pixar flick.
Oh, I thought that was Ice-T's lady.
Well, also one and the same, but I don't know if I'm going to see Coco in a movie. That Coco in a movie anytime soon. Hold on, let me pull up the app here as we continue to waste people's time. As we know, everyone who's listening on a Monday is clearly not working as they get back into the swing of things.
Ooh. See, I'm not into like the whole superhero stuff, but the Justice League.
I heard was terrible.
Okay, it's got my girl in it, right?
It does have your girl in it. I've heard from those like movies, comic books, and whatever else, like Thor should be highly recommended before we talk about even considering Justice League.
Man, I may make you go watch a Simpleton movie.
Oh, God. Please tell me it's not like a holiday comedy, office
yeah,
comedy.
Yeah, Daddy's Home 2.
No, I might have to officially exercise my veto there. See, what do we got? What do we got opening up this week? I mean, I don't know if a whole lot of options.
Okay.
Oh, you got one?
Let's do this one. I got one.
All right, fire away. What do we got?
Why don't we go with wonder?
Okay. We can do a little feel-good story. Hopefully it's a feel-good story for the holidays. I don't
Looks
mind,
like it's I, got good ratings.
I don't mind some Julia Roberts in my life.
Yeah, let's go Wonder.
All right. Wonder is going to be the movie selection. I think we'll actually have some decent choices next week to choose from. We'll figure that out. But Wonder will be the go-to movie. So if you guys, as always, have any suggestions, creative or otherwise, tweet them to us at BetTheBoardPod, or, of course, Payne or my individual Twitter handle, at PayneInsider, and mine is at Todd Furman. But all right, we've done enough rambling. I'm not really sure what we've accomplished so far today, so maybe we can provide a nugget here one way or another as we get into the big game breakdown for Monday Night Football, a game that I can't imagine will generate all that much fan interest between the Baltimore Ravens and the Houston Texans. You're looking at Baltimore, a 7.5-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. Payne, total on this game, 38. And as always, big game breakdown brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition, which aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver all the information about ongoing legalization efforts, especially from the American Gaming Association. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. And I guess, you know, when we look at this game, I think the first matchup we have to discuss, Tom Savage against this vaunted Baltimore defense, which has pitched shutouts in two of the last three games it's played.
For the sake of this podcast, you might need you and your forum cronies to F5 this for us a couple times, because I envision views being way down with this Monday Night Football.
Well, maybe nobody wants to work today, and they're just looking for ways to pass the time. So they're going to listen to us try and impart a little bit of wisdom and make them smarter sports bettors, even if they don't get all the way through the podcast.
Okay. So what were we talking about here, the Monday Night Football game?
Yeah, I think Monday Night Football is a good place to close before this thing gets too far off the tracks.
Where are we going with this?
I mean, you could talk about how it's Baltimore's first home Monday Night Football appearance since 2012. About how Ooh. We think Tom Savage may try and navigate through a Ravens defense fresh off of his 31-point outburst last week against the Arizona Cardinals. The resurgent Joe Flacco and how Baltimore suddenly has scored 20 or more in five out of their last six games. And, you know, where we see these two teams stacking up and if Baltimore gets into the playoffs.
This will be fun to watch where this line goes to see if there's support for the dog from professionals. I know we personally have made huge adjustments to this Texans team. Like, we have Houston power rated roughly in the same family tree as San Francisco and Cleveland. We were sure
that's not a good family massive, tree to be in.
we made aggressive changes, and I know what the season long metrics will say. I know what the season long efficiency numbers will indicate, but we wanted to get out ahead of this Houston team. And when you have no Dwayne Brown, no Cushing, no Watt, no Merciless. You chose not to re-sign A.J. Boye, the top corner, a season ago. And now you don't have Watt and Merciless getting pressure. The opposing QB is going to expose that Texan secondary. And we've seen that this year. Looking at this right now, Houston's allowed 22 passing touchdowns. That's the most in the NFL. In turn, like, I get it's also Monday Night Football, big stage. Internally, though, like, Houston rallied last week. I get it, but they know they're not going anywhere with Savage. What's the mindset here? When I look at a pure power number, there's actually still some value in Baltimore. How much? You know, once you got past that key number of seven, there's not a ton. We made this game in the dead zone. We made it nine, so there's not a ton of value here. And the problem was we couldn't find a teaser like to pair with Baltimore, and that's why we don't have a single cent on this game. Where... I can't be on Houston here.
I was waiting for that. I wasn't sure how long you were going to try and make it sound like you were going to make a case for the dog before you eventually went, nah, I'm not going to be able to.
No, I can't. You know, our number's nine here. At 6.5, I'm playing Baltimore. And again, Baltimore would have been in a couple teasers had we really, really liked a leg to include them in on. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a leg. You know, I think probably the Saints were the closest, and obviously that would have backdoored their way in there, but just, you know, something weird in that game. So at this point, I have no money on a side that is likely going to win this game here.
When we look at the total, any strong sentiments one way or another at 38.5 in terms of Baltimore having to do a lion's share of the scoring, or if the Texans will at least be able to muster 14 to 17 points to at least get you close?
You know, the Ravens offense is looking a little better. They got Macklin back healthy. That's big.
Got Danny, you get Danny, got Danny Woodhead back. That's all you need.
You get Danny Woodhead back. That's big. He's that pass-catching threat that we love out of the backfield. It's a matchup nightmare. He only played 13 snaps against Green Bay, but that was basically predicated on the score of that game basically being a blowout. He's not going to get a lot of touches in the run game. I do want to temper a little bit of our expectations of this Baltimore's offense. I know they're at home. They're facing a poor Houston team. But a lot of that oomph came against Miami's defense, Tennessee's defense, Green Bay's defense. Now, I do think Flacco getting a little bit healthier, again, getting a lot of his weapons back, that's going to help things. The Texans, by no means, is a fantastic defense. There's also some noise, and we love Baltimore's defense. We've been ahead of the curve on Baltimore's defense before anybody. They are still number one in defensive efficiency. They had trouble stopping the run. I would say the early middle part of that season when Williams was out on their defensive line, now that he's back, they're fantastic stopping the run again. So you have to ask yourself, like, where does the points come from? And when you throw like your game theory cap on here, the line, you know, you don't want to lay 7.5. I get it. But these are the type of games that have an ability to snowball a little bit. Because what is, if Houston can't run the ball here, and we'll find out pretty damn quick, are you confident going to the window with Savage chucking it? And these are where these games start to snowball. And so I can't be on Houston here. The intriguing thing is when you talked about the total, I could potentially see this coming off of 38. I was stunned by this when I was looking at a lot of the pace metrics. And I have these up right now. Baltimore, 8th. In pace, especially the first half pace. They're actually faster in the first half, which makes a little sense because that's you know, the game plan that you're using, you're implementing in the first half. Houston, shockingly, 7th in first half pace, 12th overall. So the pace metrics were a little stunning here to me. I would have thought Houston would want to slow it down a little bit with Savage. I'm just throwing out general thoughts here. So yeah, no, I can't go under this. I can't go under here either because Savage probably has a turnover or two in him.
So this is basically a long-winded way of us eating time saying this game is more or less unadulterated junk. And unless you have, you know, the foresight to try and identify a teaser leg coming up this weekend with Baltimore, there's probably not a whole lot of opportunity from a wagering perspective to be made here.
No, there's not. But a lot of times, right, when you start, we look at these games by ourselves in our own little office, right? We're looking at these efficiency metrics. But when you start to talk out a game a little bit, so these are just as much as valuable for me as it is for our listeners. When you get to talk about a game and talk about it out loud, maybe you come across something or there's a thought that you potentially didn't think about. Or maybe when you put it out into the air, into the open, you're like, okay, you know, let me think about that again. So for me, I can't get to the window here with Houston. That's official. Can't do it.
I didn't think you were actually going to make a case for the Texans in any capacity. I thought you were going to talk yourself into a Ravens play if the 7.5 disappears and trends towards a 7.
Man, maybe if there's a cheap buy to 6.5 and there's one out that I have that just, man, they cater to the squares and you can usually get a decent number there. At 6.5, I would make a case for Baltimore.
All right. It's all about the number, and it's waiting for those opportunities to try and get to the window with an investment you feel confident in. And should it not present itself tonight in the Ravens-Texans game, there will be something lying in the weeds as we get closer to the weekend to try and keep people satiated with their quest to build the bankrolls as we get deeper into this football season. All right. I think that kind of puts a bow on everything we've done here, good, bad, or indifferent for a Monday morning as we try and get back into the swing of normal podcasting scheduling. So, of course, the college football championship preview available on Wednesday with a special guest we're looking to secure to help us break down some of those big matchups. Dave Mason will, of course, join us not only Wednesday for college football, but also on Thursday to talk about all things NFL, house, and hopefully he's able to get his Bitcoin boner in check.
On the rise, both Bitcoin and likely his boner. What is that at this morning, by the way? What does this look like now?
I did not look this morning.
after those unexpected forks through the roof.
Everyone loves a good forking around the holidays.
96-57.
So there's a good chance if it gets to 10, we might not have Dave available for later in this week. So just want to temper folks' expectations.
That's possible.
Yeah. Either way, follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. And of course, Bet the Board Pod at Bet the Board Pod. Some great content up on the website, like always. All right, Payne, any final shots before we reconvene 48 hours from now?
No. Looking forward to Wednesday, shockingly. Some really good college football games.
It'll be the best championship Saturday that we've seen in the college football playoff era. Four matchups pitting top 10 teams against one another. Let's hope that we can uncover a winner or two. In the meantime, best of luck to all of you loyal listeners out there. Hopefully the holidays went well, and you should you identify an opportunity in this Ravens-Texans game that we couldn't find, hopefully we'll see you at the window.